Or we can, sorry, go ahead.
We can have introduction.
Yes, so we will go to our next phase. The next phase is today we will have His Holiness Chandramouli Swami Maharaj, who is going to talk about the glories of Srila Bhakti with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Actually, yesterday, according to our time zone, we had Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance day. So prior to that, we will hand over the call to Tiffany Mataji, who is going to go ahead and introduce our Maharaj. Tiffany Mataji, whenever you're ready.
Hare Krishna, dear devotees, please accept my humble obeisances, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Today we have the pleasure of having with us His Holiness Chandramouli Swami Maharaj. Maharaj is a disciple of ISKCON founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, and he is also an initiating spiritual master within the ISKCON movement. Maharaj was born in New Jersey in 1947, and he came in contact with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in Denver, Colorado, at the age of 24. In 1973, he began practicing Krishna consciousness in New York City, and shortly thereafter began serving at the New Vrindavan farm community in West Virginia. That same year, he received initiation from His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And in 1986, His Holiness Chandramouli Swami accepted the sannyas order and began preaching in Cincinnati and Columbus, Ohio. In 1995, he began serving as a resident sannyasi in Chicago, where he was based until 2013, when he relocated to Karlovac, Croatia. At present, Maharaj offers spiritual guidance around Europe, the USA, and India. Hare Krishna. Welcome to the call, Maharaj. So beautiful to see you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, once again, please accept all our humble obeisances at your lotus feet, Maharaj. We are, if you could kindly enlighten us on the glories of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur today, that will be awesome. Whenever you're ready, Maharaj, you may take the call. Hare Krishna.
Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gyanajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shumakti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvise Sasunyavari Pasyatya Dei Satarine. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shumakti Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine. Sri Varshavanavi Devi Daite Kripabdaye Krishna Sambandha. Vijnanam Daine Pravena Mahamadur Ojvama Prema Dya Sivupanuga Bhakti Da Sigoda Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namastate Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaya Dinatarine Upanuga Virulapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Purunityananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Sivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So it's a great opportunity to speak on behalf of this glorious and most holy occasion, the distant Tirubhav. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, his return to the spiritual world after performing his mission on behalf of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The life of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati is overwhelmingly amazing in philosophical teachings, the most esoteric, the most deep, the most poignant, the most revealing of all of the knowledge of Vedic literature and how secular society is to be overcome and replaced with transcendental society or spiritual society. There are volumes and volumes and volumes of information about him. There's also numerous volumes of information of his teachings. He's also a profuse writer. And he is the foundation by which Krishna consciousness spreads throughout the world. Because of him, Srila Prabhupada came forward and became his disciple, and on his order, took up the mission to preach in the Western countries. Many years ago, my one godbrother of mine, his name was Rupa Vilas, he's from the UK, at least he's living in the UK now. He has written many books on the lives of great souls, such as Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Srila Haridas Thakur, and he's done also a personal book on his life with Srila Prabhupada. And the book that he authored is entitled Ray of Vishnu. It's an appropriate title for describing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And that is somewhat intricate to understand the history that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati came into and what he and how he changed the course of history. And the changing of the course of history was first endeavored or implemented by his father, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. A little bit of history: Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world in the year 1534. And he left behind him many of his followers and disciples who continued his mission for about 100 years after his departure. Around the middle of the 1600s, things started to go in different directions. Many of the disciples, followers, and proponents of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gradually left the world. Although there was a dearth of knowledge left in the form of books, particularly by the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, still many, what we say, persons who are trying to take advantage of the teachings of a great soul and applying their own ideas to that in order to gain some popularity or to gain some material benefit started to arise around about 100 years after Lord Chaitanya left. And many of these persons claimed to be both followers and family members of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So we had groups called the Gauranga Nagaris, the Nityananda Vamsas. Now there were Sakhi Bedis, Jad Goswamis, Bowls, Owls, Sahajas, 13, what we would call Sampradayas. Not Sampradayas, but Sampradayas. That means they try to connect themselves to the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a unauthorized fashion, and we're promoting material ideas, and many of the times it was becoming even licentious. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur in the years around 1830, came across a particular book, which was The Life and Teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, written in the Bengali language. Before then, he had been a Shakta, followers of the Shakta tradition, the energies, not directly the Supreme Lord. After reading and carefully studying the book, he understood that this is what is the absolute truth, the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then from then on, he started to propagate regularly through his writings, through his work, through his lectures, the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he found himself up against a lot of these asampradayas, which had become somewhat popular amongst the local people, especially in the Bengal area. And so he found himself in conflict, not in conflict, but having to accept conflict in order to bring about truth. So many times he challenged and wrote against, preached against these asampradayas. But many of these asampradayas had followers. And so it was a great battle. In the year 1873, I believe it was, he started to pray seriously that, my dear Lord, you know, I'm all alone trying to bring about your mission of compassion into the world as predicted by you. I need, please send me someone from your personal entourage to assist me in this endeavor. Little did he know that that prayer was answered in the form of his own son, who was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And this was indicated at the time when Bhakti Vinod Thakur was living in Jagannath Puri, along with his wife. He already had four children. And his wife was pregnant for the fifth child. And then the child was born on February 6th, 1874, at 3:30 p.m. in Jagannath Puri. Right on Bhakti Vinod Thakur's house. It's still there. It's on the Grand, Road, where Lord Jagannath travels for his Rath Yatra. Bhakti Vinod Thakur at the time had been involved with organizing and managing the affairs of the Jagannath Puri temple. And so he was quite a reputable and very recognized personality. At one point he had to leave Jagannath Puri to go away on business. Right around that time after he left, Jagannath performed his Rath Yatra according to schedule, which is always in July. And the cart went along the road. As it went along the road, it stopped right in front of the house of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Bhakti Vinod Thakur's wife, Bhagavi Devi, took the child, which was at that time 6 months old, and brought it onto the Jagannath cart and placed the child at the feet of Lord Jagannath. After a few moments, the garland from Lord Jagannath fell from his body and circled around the child. Bhagavi Devi was quite amazed to see that, and she knew this was something significant. Upon the return of her husband, she explained what happened. And then, of course, Bhakti Vinod Thakur could understand, yes, my prayer has been answered in the form of my child. And so then he understood that this child was came by the mercy of the Lord to assist him in the process of bringing Lord Chaitanya's movement back into the forefront. And the life of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he was born and given the name Bimala Prasad. He grew up, he was a genius. I'll just mention some of the things, what the information we have available about his life and teachings will take days and days of lectures to go through. But we have some outstanding things that we can mention. The child at the age of 4 accidentally took a mango that was intended for the deity, the home deity of Bhaktivinoda Kaur, and he ate it. Bhaktivinoda Kaur noticed that the child had acted wrongly. So in a very mild way, but making his point, he instructed, "Oh, you have taken the mango, which is meant for the Lord. This is not good." And so at that time, Bimala Prasad, the son of Bhaktivinoda, he made a vow that throughout his whole life, he would never eat mangoes. 4-year-old boy, obviously innocent, but still he took it seriously that he had committed an offense to the Lord. And he vowed, and this is interesting because if you live in India or have been in India, or you know, mango season is a very popular season. When mangoes come out, it comes out usually in the May and June time. People buy mangoes. There's mangoes profusely available. People make mango chutney, mango drinks, mango everything. Mango lassi. Mango was used profusely during that time, and it's so sweet and so tender and juicy and tasty. But many times, his followers or friends would come and bring him a mango, and he would say, "I'm sorry, I'm an offender. I cannot take." And he followed that his whole life, never took any mangoes. When he was 7, his father gave him Tulsi beads, Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and the Sringa Mantra to chant. And at the age of 7, he had learned the entire Bhagavad Gita. He knew every verse by heart. And he could also recite the verses and also speak about each and every verse. In the year 1900, his father was being regularly visited by one great sage who was coming to hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur speak, and that was Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who was a complete renunciate living on the banks of the Ganges. In a very, he had nothing. All he had was the clothes on his body, and that's all. But he was chanting all the time, complete renunciation. But he would come to hear from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned that actually, in order to fulfill the goal of life, one has to accept a spiritual master. Without accepting the spiritual master, one cannot reach the goal of life, which is pure love for Krishna. And therefore he instructed him, "I think it is about time," he was 26 years old, "that you now accept. And therefore, I recommend you go to Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, fall at his feet, and ask him for Diksha initiation." Now, Srila Bhakti Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj had taken a vow throughout his life never to accept any disciples. And he was fixed in that. Many times people came to him, and he had refused to accept anyone. So now his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was telling Bimala, you must go and get Diksha initiation from him. So he went, fell at the feet of Bhaktivinoda Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and asked for initiation. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was quite firm. He says, I'm sorry, I don't accept anyone for initiation. So he went back home feeling quite despondent, told his father what happened. His father said, no, you should not accept his refusal. You should find ways to convince him to accept you as a disciple. And then he went back again, this time in a very humble way, falling at the feet, praying, begging for initiation. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, well, I'll ask Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so come back in 3 days. So he left. After 3 days, he returned, and he was eager to hear what Lord Chaitanya had said. And then he asked Gaurakishore Das Babaji, did you ask Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Yes. What did he say? Well, he didn't answer. And that was the final statement. So feeling very, very despondent, he thought, without having a spiritual master, there's no purpose to human life. So therefore, let me end this human body. So he went walking, and he went to this bridge, and he was going to throw himself off the bridge and end his life, feeling that I've been refused, and this is my spiritual master, and he's not willing to accept me. Then what is the purpose of human life? So just when he was about to end his life, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj noted all of this and came just in time and said, actually, wait, I was just seeing how sincere you were. I wanted to test you, and I can see you are qualified. Therefore, I will accept you as my one and only disciple. And he gave him the initiation, Sri Varshamanavi Devi, which is a beautiful name for Srimati Radharani. And then he preached, and around the year 1905, he went to Mayapur, stayed there for a number of years, made a vow to chant 1 billion names of the Lord. And for 9 years, he chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in a little shack, just living practically on very simple foodstuffs, roots, and some rice. He would cook the rice in a little pot, and that's what he would eat. And after 9 years, it took him to complete 1 billion names. You can imagine how much chanting that is. That's on the level of Srila Haridas Thakur. He was preparing for his mission. In 1915, his father and, right, a little bit later after that, about a year later, his spiritual master both left the world. Now he was feeling lost. What to do? I'm feeling all alone. How can I continue on? But then one night he had a dream. And in the dream, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the entire Panchatattva, along with his father, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, his spiritual master, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, all appeared to him in the dream, along with Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj also. They all appeared to him and said, we are with you. You will be successful. There is no worldly impediment that will stop your preaching of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. So take heart and preach. And he took this dream, which was more like a vision than a dream, to heart and he became inspired. In the year 1918, he took sannyas by holding a picture of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj in front of him and chanting the mantras into the sannyas order of life according to the principles taught by the Ramanujacharyas, the Sri Sampradaya. And then his preaching took off. He started a newspaper called Sajjanatoshini and performed many, many, many activities. In 1922, our spiritual master, Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, came and he was walking along the street with his friend Narendranath Mulik. And Narendranath said, "Oh, Abhay," because Prabhupada's name was Abhay, "I know a very saintly person. And he's giving a lecture tonight at 7 p.m. We should go to hear from him." Our Prabhupada said, "I know all of these sadhus. They don't really impress me." As Prabhupada, when he was growing up, his father would always be hosting these traveling sadhus. And Prabhupada was not so much impressed by them. And so he refused, but Narendranath Mulik was very strong, and he said, as Prabhupada describes, he grabbed me by the arm and he was pulling me, "Come on, we should go." So I went, and when I came, it was on a rooftop, Uttadanga Junction Road, 10 Uttadanga Junction Road. Bhakti Siddhanta was sitting with some of his disciples and he was giving a lecture on Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada came in along with Narendranath Mulik, and of course it's customary that when you come into the presence of a saintly person, you offer respects. So our Srila Prabhupada offered his respects, and while he was bending down, Bhakti Siddhanta noted him and said, "Oh, you are a very intelligent young man. You should take Lord Chaitanya's teachings to the Western world." As Prabhupada describes, I was somewhat taken aback. We hadn't even formally met, and he's already given me a life mission. So I was saying, well, obviously, Lord Chaitanya's mission is important, but we can see that we are a dependent country. At that time, Prabhupada was father of the Gandhi movement. And so he had refused his diploma in college based on non-cooperation with the British. Prabhupada was a real Gandhian. And so he started to propagate, we need to get Swaraj, we need to get liberation from British rule. Bhaktisiddhanta wasn't interested in hearing any of that. He said, "This rule, that rule, this political party, that political party, they all come, they all go. Lord Chaitanya's mission cannot wait." And Prabhupada later on said, "I was defeated, but I was so happy to become defeated. I had met a very, very nice saintly person." And of course, that was the seed that led to the sprouting of the ISKCON movement, which is now all over the world, planted by his divine grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and fueled by the enthusiasm, the intelligence, and the determination of his wonderful disciple, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, our spiritual master and founder acharya of the ISKCON Society. I'd like to divert my attention away from just talking now to reading some questions and answers by disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta to him. and hearing his responses. This is in a particular book. I don't know if you're familiar with this particular book. It's an amazing book. I'll hold it up to the screen. You can see it. It's called you see the picture of Bhaktisiddhanta on the screen. Like that. It's called Prabhupada Saraswati Thakur, The Life and Precepts of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It's a huge book in terms of its size. It's not very lengthy, but it's a coffee table size book. It's huge. So I'll read one section. It has many sections describing different aspects of Bhaktisiddhanta's life and many of his experiences in preaching Krishna consciousness. So try to bear with me. I'll try to read as slow as I can so you can absorb the question along with the answer. Question. Everything I know is based on my experience of this world. So how will I know anything about transcendence, or which is transcendental? Bhaktisiddhanta, it is true that in our present state is very difficult for us to know about something which is transcendental. But it's also true that there is a way of knowing these things. If we have friends and relatives in the faraway place, then a messenger will bring us their news. Question, but the messenger does not come to everyone, does he? Bhaktisiddhanta, those who are not visited by the messenger are very unfortunate. But there is one thing, and you will see that the messenger will definitely bring the news to those who are really hankering for this news. So he's making the point, those who really want this news of transcendence, they will receive it. Question, how will we recognize the messenger from Vaikuntha? How will we know which message is true and which is not? Bhaktisiddhanta, if my prayer is sincere, then by the mercy of the omniscient God, everything will be revealed. One who wants to be educated will only come to know an educated person by the kindness of the latter. The Supreme Lord who is in my heart will help me in every way. All I have to do is depend on him. In this world, there are two ways of gathering knowledge. One is to know things by experiencing them in this world. Another is to understand that the experience of this world is incomplete and insufficient. Therefore, to gather the knowledge which belongs to another world, we have to completely surrender ourselves to a saint who has descended from that world and hear from him. Question. Material experience is all we have. How can we give that up and surrender to something transcendental? Prabhupada. Bhaktisiddhanta, we should not be afraid of it, thinking it will be very difficult. One has to have great strength of mind to know the truth. If one wants to learn to swim, he must not be afraid of water. At the same time, one should know that full surrender or the path of exclusive surrender is not a difficult thing. In fact, it is very easy and natural for the soul. Anything which is opposed to it, that is unnatural and painful. Question, how can we have such courage? So put yourself in the position of the questioner as we're hearing the answers. How can we have such courage? We have to hear about the Supreme Lord from his own agent. When we hear those things, then all material experience and the inclination to make false arguments have to be locked up. When we hear about the Supreme Lord from a living sadhu who can deliver these things in a bold, lively, inspiring way, then all weakness will disappear from our hearts and we will feel a kind of courage which was never there before. And the soul's natural tendencies to surrender to the Lord will fully manifest itself. In that surrendered heart, the eternally manifested truth of the transcendental world will spontaneously reveal itself. Very important how we carefully, with attention and eagerness to understand, hear from a living sadhu. When we do that, the desire is awakened within our heart that was never there before, the desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Question: are the path of exclusive surrender and firm determination the two most important things for us? I'll read that question again. Are the path of exclusive surrender and firm determination the two most important things for us? Srila Prabhupada, absolutely. One should have such firm determination also to worship the Lord, saying, I must receive his grace. I must not go astray. I must always go on chanting his name. God will undoubtedly help me if I am a bona fide seeker. If one fully surrenders himself at the lotus feet of his guru, then he will definitely attain all success. The mercy of Sri Gurudev, who is none different from Srila Rupa Goswami, will be our only capital. Only that will be beneficial for us. The one has to surrender themselves to the spiritual master, and by their mercy, that will be everything we need to achieve complete auspiciousness, spiritual benefit. Question: can one worship Krishna without being under the guidance of Sri Gurudev? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, never. Our only aim in life is to cultivate Krishna consciousness. This can only be done under the guidance or instructions of the devotee of Krishna. Sri Varshavanavi Devi, Srimati Radharani, is most favored by Krishna. Worshipping her is most favorable for worshipping Krishna. No one is more favorable than Sri Radha. Those who are very dear to Srimati Radharani are all our spiritual masters. We, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, are the worshippers of Krishna who belongs to Srimati Radharani. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas are more on the side of Radharani than on the side of Krishna. Sri Gurudev is not different from Srimati Radharani. Only by getting the favor of the most favored is it possible to cultivate Krishna consciousness. When one is not under the guidance of the most favored, one will not find anything favorable for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness or for the pursuit of Krishna happiness. Instead, one will find that one's heart is dominated by demoniac desires for one's own happiness. One must give up such tendencies, which are unfavorable for devotion, and give up all pride and arrogance. A devotee can find all opportunity to serve Krishna only when he wants to serve Krishna under the guidance of Gurudev. But unfortunately, we have forgotten to make any effort to make Krishna happy. Instead, we have become busy in pursuit of our own happiness. Alas, instead of making Krishna the head of our household, we are acting in the role of the householder, and we have become attached to our family life. But if we want what is good for us, then we have to become careful while we are alive in the human body. Otherwise, we will be deceived. We will miss our golden opportunity. So there's a little discussion by Bhaktisiddhanta answering questions, culminating that ultimately the success in devotional service is to get the favor of Krishna by getting the favor of those who he is, for those who he favors. Gurudev, being the manifestation of Srimati Radharani's mercy, can be that person who awakens within us the desire to serve Krishna in a favorable and devotional way. So I thought that would be very edifying for us. I'll conclude with some words of wisdom from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And these are little, we might say, aphorisms, short sentences. There's 25 of them. I don't know if I should read them all, and if we have time. We want to take some time for questions. But I'll read some which I think are the outstanding ones. These are penned by Bhaktisiddhanta himself. We are put to test and trial in this world. Number one, we are put to test and trial in this world. Only those who attend the kirtan of the devotees can succeed. Every spot on earth where discourses of God are held is a place of pilgrimage. Number three, possessions of objects not related to Krishna is our main malady. Chant the Maha Mantra loudly with attachment. This will drive away inertia, worldly evils, ghosts, and pests. Pests, people who are bothersome. Pay due respects to the extroverts of the world, but do not be appreciative of their manners and conduct. They are to be shaken off from your mind. The glories of the worldly people. Give them respect for what they are, but their manners and their conducts are not very appreciated by devotees. A devotee feels the presence of God everywhere, but one averse to the Lord denies his existence everywhere. To recite the name of Sri Krishna is bhakti. You cannot appreciate transcendental matters with the reasoning of the world. It is sheer nonsense to decry them with the measuring stick of your intellect. Life is for the glorification of the topics of Sri Hari. If that is stopped, then what need is there to carry on life? Next one. Physical illness with Hari Bhajan is preferred to physical fitness without Hari Bhajan. Our span of life on earth is short. Our life will be crowned with success if the body wears out with constant discourses on Sri Hari. Next one, unless we are devoted to God, secularism shall not leave us. Next one, look within yourself, amend yourself, rather than pry into the frailties of others. In this world of Maya, which is a verse to the Lord and is full of trials and tribulations. Only patience, humility, and respect for others are our friends for Hari Bhajan. When faults in others misguide you and delude you, have patience, introspect, find faults in yourself. Know that others cannot harm you unless you harm yourself. And the last one is a preaching statement. I wish that every selfless, tender-hearted person within the Gaudiya Math be willing, be prepared to shed 200 gallons of blood for the nourishment of the spiritual body of every individual of this world. So these are some statements, aphorisms, things that we can meditate upon. If you want, I will be happy to send a copy of these 25 to whoever you designate. That problem, maybe I can send it to Shamagori since I have her contact already. And then anyone who would be interested in having these, you could read them, meditate on them, think about them, and see how it applies to you and how you can take advantage of it. Okay, so we'll stop here. And there's much more to the life of Bhaktisiddhanta. He disappeared on December 31st, 1936. I'll read something about his disappearance, which I think is appropriate since today is his disappearance. On the morning of December 31st, 1936, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur requested Sripad B.R. Sridhar Swami to sing the bhajan Sri Rupa Manjari by Srila Narottam Das Thakur and Sripad Naveen Krishna Vidya Lankar to sing Nam Kirtan. Nam Kirtan is Yasomati Nandana. In the forenoon, he requested the editors of the Gaudiya magazine to see to it that the Vaishnava Manjusa, basket of Vaishnava vocabulary, will be compiled and published. In his last days, he specifically requested that his disciples form a governing body commission, GBC, of 10 to 12 devotees to manage society's affairs. You can see they had failed to carry out that instruction. There was chaos in Gaudiya Math after he left. Some people were fighting for the position of Acharya. And ultimately, the whole society became ineffectual in preaching Krishna consciousness because they failed to establish the governing board commission, which was one of his last requests before he departed the world. And Srila Prabhupada didn't want to make the same mistake. So in 1970, he established the GBC Governing Body Commission. Two of his last statements were, love and rapture, both should have the same end in view. Thakur Narottam lived on the principles of Rupa Raghunath. It is good to follow. To all, he announced, please accept my blessings to you all, present and absent. Please bear in mind, our sole duty in religion is to spread and propagate service to the Lord and his devotees. Thus, the great Acharya, the Simha Guru, the uncompromising sadhu, the Vaikuntha man, as our Srila Prabhupada once described him as the tireless preaching of the pure teachings of Lord Chaitanya, left this world, uttering the name of Krishna, at around 5:30 a.m. on Thursday, January 1st, 1937, and entered into the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, having firmly established the foundation of a spiritual movement, which would be carried around the world by his pure servant, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder of Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much Maharaj for enlightening on the topic of this Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Thank you so much for sharing so many points. We are very grateful to you Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, is there anybody having any realization? Please go ahead. Yeah, now you all can unmute yourself, please.
Thank you, Maharaj.
You can also turn on your cameras, which is very nice. They can see the audience and makes everything more personal.
Thank you, Maharaj. Not only for these stories, Maharaj, but also the statements that you, not just the statements, the question answer session, it was so interesting, Maharaj. So wonderful. If you could share the name of that book, that would be fantastic. And I noticed Vinita Gandharva, Vinita Mataji already sent the statements to our host group. Thank you, Mataji. It was very inspirational, Maharaj. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Devotees, if you have any questions, you can pose your questions to Maharaj now. Everybody has become sublime, Maharaj.
So, Hare Krishna Maharaj. Actually, yeah, there is one question. One of the instructions said we should not, there was a distinction between appreciating and paying due respects to the extroverts of this world. Can you elaborate on that, please?
I'll read it again here. Let me see. Let me see. Pay due respects to the extroverts of the world, but do not be appreciative of their manners and conduct. They are to be shaken off from your mind.
Yeah, so for one thing, what is meant by the extroverts of this world? And mm-hmm. what is meant by, you know, be appreciative?
Those Don't people be appreciative. That are, yeah, those people that are prominent, the ones that are out there, the ones you notice. They may be popular in different fields of society, politicians, doctors, sports heroes, television and movie stars, authors, writers, philanthropists, people who are out there who have name and fame. Give them respects. Because in the sense that whatever greatness a person has, even on a material level, that is a quality that comes from Krishna. So he said, pay due respects. That means we honor the fact that they have achieved something, but we're not interested in the way they conduct themselves or what they have achieved either. So he's acknowledging their greatness, but at the same time, we're not interested in it at the same time. Because they have nothing to offer to us. Those who are spiritually minded will find, they'll look towards the great souls that have gone before us, the acharyas, the sadhus, the saints, the spiritual masters. These will we will emulate. These will we will worship. These will we will learn from. not the great persons of this world, who are simply motivated by their own selfish interests. Although they may have done something wonderful by material standards, still, it's not. We're devotee. When we see Krishna, then we understand what is actually really wonderful. Or when we see his pure devotee, then we understand this is true. This is true success. This is wonder. This is worth absorbing ourselves in. Not the developed talents of the materialists.
I'm also thinking that, you know, even though such people, they do what they do for selfish motives, why can we not appreciate their, you know, accomplishment? You know, I mean, to say they were empowered by Krishna, after all, to be able to do what they do, you know, and maybe there is something that they accomplished that we could find useful for our own spiritual life.
Well, that's all these accomplishments are already there within the spiritual realm. You don't have to look outside for that. It's already there. We're so much connected with the external environment that we think this is the only place these things are there. Or because we are finding ourselves more in contact with that environment, this is where we notice it. But it's there also in the activities of the great souls. Even their material accomplishments can be appreciated. But when we go outside and look for the mundane persons, then we start to think we should emulate them in some form or another. We have nothing that we need from them. Everything is there within the realm of spirituality, within the realm of the history of our society. The history of spiritual and the lives and teachings of the great souls are much more numerous than what we find in the material world. And that was brought out by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in one discussion, comparing the spiritual world to the material world and showing how great the material, how insignificant the material world is compared to the greatness of the spiritual world. But what you said and what is being said here is that accomplishment that they have achieved is coming from Krishna. In other words, as Krishna says, I am the ability of all living entities. And that's true on all levels, both material and spiritual. So that much we can appreciate. That somehow or other Krishna has benedicted them with this, what we say, ability and accomplishment. So in that sense, we can see, you know, how Krishna works even in the material world. The whole 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna shows the glories of the activities that are great in the material world and calls that non-different than him. He is the best in all categories, both material and spiritual. So that much we can appreciate, and that's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is saying. But then he said, you know, but their manners and conduct on the personal level, we are not interested in that.
Okay, thank you, Maharaj. Actually, just had one other question. I was wondering if you would elaborate on the statement that Guru is a manifestation of Srimati Radharani's mercy.
Yeah. Well, that's
can you just say something more?
Yeah, that's if you look, you can find it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in chapter 1 of Adi Lila. I believe it's verse 46 or 47. I think it's verse 47. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes the statement that the spiritual master is either coming from the tattva of Srimati Radharani or the tattva of Lord Nityananda. Either one. So two areas where the spiritual master comes from, either Nityananda Vamsa or Radharani's Vamsa, like that. It's in the purport. You can go for verse 47, yeah, Adi Lila, and see if you can find it in the very end of the purport. I think it's there. Let me see here. Let's see, it also mentions here, the initiating spiritual is the personal manifestation of Sri Madan Mohan Vigraha, whereas the instructing spiritual master is the personal representation of Sri Govindaji. Both of these deities are worshipped in Vrindavan. Gopinath is the ultimate attraction. Is there any more to the purport? Then go to 46, I think it might be there. Let's go down the page. Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. Yeah. Let me see here. It mentions, keep going down the page. There it is in the last sentence.
Yeah, I see it.
The spiritual master is always considered either one of the confident socials of Srimati Radharani or a manifested representative of Sri Nityananda Guru. There it is.
Okay.
And you'll see there's two tattvas there, or two rasas. Radharani is Madhurya Ras, so some spiritual masters are connected with the Madhurya Ras, and others are with the Sakya Ras of Lord Nityananda. He is Sakya Ras. So those two rasas are manifesting the gurus.
I'm wondering now, is it should it be important to us whether to know whether our diksha.
When Prabhupada was asked himself, you know, who are you in the spiritual world? Prabhupada said, that you don't require. Another time, he was asked the question again, and he said, if I told you, you'd faint. But Prabhupada did give indications in a less direct way of who he was, and devotees speculate on that and say he is, some say he's from the Sakya Ras and some say he's from the, but the spiritual master knows where his connection is, but he usually doesn't reveal that. So it's generally not important for the disciple to know. Because then the disciple starts to see the spiritual master in a certain way. And that may impair his ability to understand and follow. That's why Prabhupada never revealed the actual identity or the connection with the different rasas.
I wonder how it would be possible for that to impair following.
Well, rather than seeing him as the your representative of the Lord who has given you guidance and instructions, you take him on the level of a particular mood of rasa. And you may also, you know, be inclined to that mood or you may not be inclined to that mood. But it doesn't really matter for you. That's why it's not being revealed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur did reveal who he was. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati also. Both of them were Manjaris. They were coming from the Tattva of Radharani. So we find Acharyas are coming from either one of those two Tattvas. When Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati is mentioning Radharani here, he's also understanding that his particular situation is also coming from Radharani.
So if a disciple comes to know...
He sees the spiritual master in a different way. And that could impair his following the instructions. Or, you know, thinking, well, maybe this is not my spiritual master. I need a spiritual master from another tattva. And that would be a tremendous offense.
Mm-hmm.
That would destroy that disciple's whole spiritual life. Mm-hmm. And that's happened before. Mm-hmm. But therefore, our concern is his instructions. That's our main concern. Not so much his spiritual identity.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna, Mother Tiffany.
So good to see you. I was really appreciating when you were reading the question and answers from the book. And I hope it's okay to ask, if you don't mind, if there was, I think it was the second or third to last, where Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj was speaking of going, you know, hearing from, I can't remember exactly how it was worded, but maybe not necessarily a realized devotee or... It was really, really beautiful. Let's see if I wrote anything.
I can look it up.
Thank you so much.
Let's see. You say towards the end of the...
I think it was the second to last answer that he gave. Second or third to last.
Mm-hmm. Well, the question, can we worship Krishna without being under the guidance of Sri Gurudev? Is that the question?
Oh, I think it may have been the one before that, I think.
Are the path of exclusive surrender and firm determination the two most important things for us?
Hmm.
And what was the essence of your question?
Yeah, so the essence, Maharaj was talking about just how important it is to hear from
a living sadhu.
Yes.
We have to hear about the Supreme Lord from his own agent, Mm-hmm. When we hear those things, then all material experience and inclination to make false arguments have to be locked up, dispensed with. When we hear about the Supreme Lord from the living sadhu who can deliver these talks in a bold, lively, inspiring way, then all weaknesses will disappear from our hearts, and we will feel a kind of courage which will never be there before. And the soul's natural tendencies to surrender to the Lord will fully manifest itself.
Yes.
In that surrendered heart, the eternally manifested truth of the transcendental world will spontaneously reveal itself.
Thank you so much, Maharaj, for reading that again. That's so beautiful, so beautiful. And such an important instruction.
Yeah, we have to hear from self-realized soul, living sadhu.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I wonder what it means. I have a feeling I know what it means, but I wonder what it means if you do hear from such self-realized souls, but that spontaneous inspiration or something doesn't seem to follow. Yeah, awaken.
Yeah, it does. If you're actually hearing, it will work. What is that hearing? That one is eager to know and eager to follow. Questions for the sake of questions are not really considered to be within the realm of spiritual success. In other words, people question just because they want to ask a question. And that's sometimes the only benefit from that is it inspires someone else to ask a question who may be more sincere. So our questions should be in line with our desire to move forward in spiritual life. What can I learn that I can take on? What can I learn that I can leave behind? And these questions should fit into these categories. And then we'll make progress.
Yes, hear but the willingness to apply what you hear, basically.
Yeah. We all struggle with something in our devotional life, but if we just push it to the side and don't try to overcome it or don't want to learn more, we think we have enough knowledge, then we'll stagnate in our spiritual life. Stagnation will come because the eagerness, which is the foundation for advancement, is not there.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah. Hare Krishna. Thank you. But keep chanting, keep reading the books. Take the opportunity to associate with devotees, and this will bring inspiration to want to make advancement. If we don't associate or don't have sufficiently associate, don't read, or don't take our chanting seriously, we'll just become very routine. And being very routine, we really don't look forward to the activities of devotional service. We just perform them. Spiritual life is on all levels of the living entity's nature. It's not just intellectual, it's emotional, it's enthusiastical, it is grateful, appreciative. There's so many levels that spiritual life, spiritual knowledge, and spiritual association impacts us on all levels of our existence, even on the physical level. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was a person who would look for opportunities to challenge people's material attachments. And that would make them think, some people would be maybe a little bit taken aback. Others would sometimes feel it's unnecessary. But many times those who were sincere really appreciated. Oh, yeah, he's showing me where my attachments are. Sadhu means to cut the knot of material attachments and retie that knot at the lotus feet of Krishna. Sadhu is your best friend, but he's not a person who patronizes all your likings. And, you know, there are gurus like that. Oh, you are so nice. You are so fine. Everything is about you is wonderful. Therefore, just take this mantra and everything will be nice here. And just send your donation into post office box 000000. There's thousands of those gurus in the world. Only those who actually want Krishna will come to accept that where I am is not where I want to be. I want to go farther, closer to Krishna. That was Bhaktisiddhanta. I mean, he was preaching so heavy that his life was threatened. There's one story in the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I didn't tell this one, but it's interesting. It should be told. Some Babaji's and others, they got together and they collected a large amount of money. And they came to one police officer and said, we want to take some action against Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So please do not take action against us. And here, and they offered him then 25,000 rupees. Now, in those days, a rupee was equivalent to a dollar, maybe even more. It's not like the rupees now. That was like $25,000 and more. They wanted to kill Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and they gave money to the police. And the police officer said, you know, we generally take such bribes and such offers, but I cannot do it for a saintly person. So he refused. And then that same police officer went to Bhaktisiddhanta and told him, be careful, there's men out there, they want to kill you. So this is how his preaching was. It was so powerful that they wanted to get rid of him. And Srila Prabhupada also said, he said, if they knew what I was saying, they would kill me. He said that also. But they did know what he was saying, But they were figuring that Prabhupada was very old, that he would leave very soon. And there was also talks of different threats on his life, but nothing really manifested. So some kingly person is an enemy to the gross materialists who want to do everything to keep the worldly values prominent. So when they speak, they shake up those who are attached to those who are strongly attached to material world. But a devotee, he likes that. They like to hear something that will shake them up and make them think and maybe help them move forward in Krishna consciousness. One of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's statements, which I didn't read, he said, a sycophant is neither a guru or a preacher. A sycophant means one who lives off others. Well, I don't want to speak so strongly, then maybe my donations won't come in as the way they're coming. And people will not give me donations. And so I should be very nice and make sure I just speak up to a certain point, and that way the bank accounts will increase. But that's not a preacher. That's simply one who is in the name of a preacher. He's a materialist, ultimately. So study the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It's quite immense. And I would recommend, if you want to start somewhere, there are a three volume set by Bhakti Vikash Maharaj, one of Prabhupada's disciples. He took 22 years to put together these three volumes on the life of Bhaktisiddhanta. And it's an amazing read. The books are quite lengthy. They are, you know, they're about the size of the Srimad Bhagavatams, each book. But they're worth reading, and you'll find in there statements and history that you have never heard before anywhere about Bhaktisiddhanta. It's really amazing, along with a lot of information on his disciples also, and many of the pastimes that they engaged in during their preaching work. That's a nice read. You could get everything right there in that one set. I forgot what is the overall title of the three books. Does anyone know for sure? Maybe they can post it on the chat. What is it called? I think it's a very easy.
I think if you give me a moment, I can find it. 1 second. Let's see if I can find it.
Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava. Yeah. So it's by Bhakti Prakash Maharaj, who traveled throughout Bengal and other places to collect the information. He got a lot of firsthand information. It's an interesting read.
Any last minute questions for Maharaj?
Hare Krishna, I was just going to make a comment that I once heard that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was Shrutidhar, that he learned everything just by hearing it once.
Yeah, and that Shrutidhar is that he never forgot anything he ever heard or read in his whole life. he would spend, instead of going into the classrooms during his college days, he would go to the libraries and just read the books. Sometimes he would read all the books in the entire library. And he remembered everything he read. As it says, he was a Nitya Siddha. He was not part of this world. He came on a mission on behalf of Lord Chaitanya to push Lord Chaitanya's movement forward. And then, of course, our Srila Prabhupada came, accepted his shelter, and took that mission and brought it everywhere in the world. So it was Bhakti Siddhanta's idea. It was Bhakti Vinod Thakur's vision, which he prophesies as being the future, that the people from all the five races would be coming together and chanting Jai Satchinandana and having kirtan. And it was Bhakti Siddhanta who actually formulated the program and sent devotees, his disciples, to different places in the world. But he didn't tell Srila Prabhupada where to go. And Prabhupada chose New York because his godbrothers had went to London and they had gotten some recognition there. And there was a fanfare celebration for Bhan Maharaj when he came back that he had successfully opened up Krishna consciousness there. But it was only one prominent lady who actually started a little preaching center, which later on closed. And the devotees in London, they met with very prestigious people in the government, in parliament, and they made their impressions upon them and got some recognition as great sadhus, missionaries from India. The Prabhupada went right to the Bowery, 26 Second Ave, where people were the hippies and the dropouts and the meth freaks and the potheads. He went to those who were the most unlikely. But they had nothing to, you know, there was no, Prabhupada wasn't a threat to them because they were looking for something. Whereas in the preaching in England, these preachers were actually showing a complete contrary lifestyle to the people in big political places. So they didn't really get any support at all. But Prabhupada went to New York. And as he said, my godbrothers, they went to London and they failed. So let me fail in a new place if I have to fail. So he chose New York. Bhakti Siddhanta sent preachers to France, to Germany, to what is known as Myanmar now. It was Burma at the time. Many places around Europe and Asia they went, came back with practically no success. But it was Srila Prabhupada whose determination and great spiritual knowledge together formulated the worldwide movement, which was predicted by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But it was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati that planted the seed and initiated the activity. It was Srila Prabhupada who carried it out. So these three acharyas, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and Bhakti Vedanta Swami, together make up the modern development of the Krishna conscious movement in the Western world. Okay, I think I have to go pretty soon because I have another class coming up in about an hour. I have to leave for that class. So in between, there's lunch prasadam. So things are getting a little tight on my side here. So I think, thank you all for coming on and hearing about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. We thank Shyama Gauri for choosing the topic. She always knows what to do. She has the right understanding of time, place, and circumstance. So we thank you very much. And we'll see you all again in 2022.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Thank you so much, Maharaj.